nata a Beirut da genitori palestinesi, passaporto inglese, una vita in viaggio, un'instancabile nomade. Questa è Mona Hatoum, un'artista al cui lavoro è spesso associato il concetto di displacement, dislocazione, spaziale, artistica, ma soprattutto concettuale. In questa intervista spiega come si è interessata all'ambivalenza percettiva derivante dalla molteplicità di significati impliciti negli oggetti più comuni, che sotto le sue mani assumono significati altri e opposti alla originaria funzionalità, come giochi con il paradosso e con l'effetto straniante di alcuni materiali. L'intervista è stata fatta da Angela Mengoni, in occasione della mostra D'Ombra, una collettiva pensata da Lea Vergine per il Palazzo delle Papesse.
Not a long time ago, I read you had a conversation with Janine Anthony where you said that you don't like interviews, actually.
That's right, so. Yes. Yeah, I mean, the reason why I said that is because very often people come with their own topics that interest them or what they think they see in my work, and the conversation always goes into their direction. And of course, they have the editing power, so they pick up whatever they feel is important. And that's why I always feel like I'm in interviews, I'm never really putting my views through. In this exhibition, D'Ombra, I was first asked to show a piece which is called Light Sentence. And it's a piece from 1992. And it's actually a bank of lockers, but they look very much like cages because they're made of wire mesh. And it's in a U shape, and in the middle of this structure, there's a light bulb that moves very slowly up and down. So it actually projects shadows on the walls, but all the shadows are moving, so the whole space feels like it shifts under your feet when you move in. It has a very beautiful, yet quite eerie feeling about it. And that's actually the first work they wanted for this show. I mean, it's a work that's been shown a lot. It belongs to the Centre Pompidou, and, you know, unfortunately, we couldn't get hold of this piece for the show here, so I suggested this new piece, which I've just made earlier this year during a residency in Cairo. I was actually invited to do an exhibition, and I turned it into a residency where I spent 5 weeks in Cairo and worked with various craftsmen, and actually also worked with kids who come to the workshop that is organized by this gallery called the Townhouse Gallery. And this is one of the pieces that developed from that exhibition. And it's called Misbah. Misbah means lantern in Arabic. When you see it, it's obviously has this kind of magic lantern look to it. It's very Eastern. It's very kind of made by using the same technique as making those beautiful lanterns, which normally have a lot of stars on them, and they sort of project these beautiful, like starry night kind of shadows all over the room. So I took that theme and I actually introduced another element to it, which is those silhouettes of soldiers. And actually I made it animated, I made it to turn around. So when you first look at it, the fact that it's turning around sort of has a playful element to it, because it looks like the children's lanterns that turn around, you know, because of the heat of the lamp, they turn around and project colorful things around the walls. But in this case, when you walk in, your first reaction is, wow, it's beautiful, it's turning. And then when you realize what the shapes are, it gives you a kind of a feeling of negative, something else. It becomes more serious. And I like this play where, you know, you approach something and you first see it as something playful and lighthearted, and then you get to another dimension or another layer in it. And also the fact that it turns around, it looks a bit like a police siren as well. So there's all these little things in it. It takes you in different directions at the same time, and that's always something that I like. Well, actually, I didn't know I was going to work with children until I got there. And this, the work that I did with children was a different work altogether. I don't know which came first, but basically the work I did with children was to invite the children who actually already come to this workshop. The gallery called the Townhouse Gallery have this Friday workshop for the kids. They're actually either street kids or kids who work full-time. I mean, we call them kids, they're between 12 and 16, but most of them have a full-time job. The Friday is the only day where they can do something that's fun for them. So they come and do these workshops. And I was told by the gallery director that some of them are very talented with their hands. So I said I would like to ask them, like to commission them to make a cage of their own choice, of their own materials, of their own design. And he pointed out to me certain boys mostly who would be good at making these projects. And we asked them to do these things and they came up with drawings. And, you know, some of them were really very exciting and excited about the whole thing. So I end up with 10 cages, small. I restricted the dimensions to 35 centimeters maximum, but actually when they started creating, some of them became like twice as big. But still, this was the project I made with the kids. And I end up with 10 cages, which I exhibited in the main space in the gallery. I mean, it's a strategy I've used a lot where I'm using everyday objects or like furniture or things we encounter in our everyday life. So we have already a relationship with these objects. So they're recognizable. But then I sort of shift them from their usual function, or sometimes they become, you know, don't have that function anymore. They sort of contradict their function, if you like. And, you know, when you approach them again, you're always sort of expecting, say, for instance, in the case of a very early piece called Incomunicado, where it's an infant's cot, an infant's bed made of metal bars. And, you know, when you approach it, you have this kind of soft feeling about, oh, this is a baby's cot or a child's cot. And then when you get close to it, you realize that instead of a solid base for the mattress, there are these very thin wires stretched across the base. So it takes you into thinking about violence towards children and that sort of thing. So there's a kind of jolt in your way of perceiving this work. When I first decided I wanted to be an artist, I thought I would be a painter because, you know, where I come from in Lebanon, a woman is always a painter if she's an artist. You know, you don't think about women making things out of metal and, you know, or making sculptures. So, I mean, when I went to art school, I wanted to become a painter. I did go to art school, you know, and gradually moved into the area of minimal work. I became very interested in materials originally, before thinking about objects, more like materials, working with that. And then that developed into more conceptual works and then the object, I suppose. But in between, I was involved for a long time in performance. And that's where the involvement with the body comes in. So that despite the fact that now the work does not have me as the performer within it, I'm always thinking about the body of the member of the audience or the spectator when they approach the work and how they approach it and how they interact with it physically in the space. That's always very important for me. I'm always thinking about it in relation to the viewer and how, you know, they perceive it at the first instance and then when they get closer and what happens after that. So that's why the body is very present. But then through the performance work, I then started making installation where, of course, I sort of took myself out of the work, but I wanted the spectator to become the performer within that space. So those big installations that I made in the early 90s were very much about, you know, an expanded kind of sculpture, if you like, in a space that actually engulfs the spectator and they become enmeshed in it somehow. So this is how it developed gradually into making objects. So it's been a long process. But I mean, like the work I'm showing downstairs, although it's a small object, it relies on the space. I mean, it actually is an installation. You know, the body was very much a topic at the time in the, you know, early 90s to mid 90s. So I think that piece came at a time when everybody was talking about the body. But also, for me, it's also at the time, and I suppose it still is, the case now is the body became a dangerous thing, like reference to body fluids and AIDS and the feeling of the body becoming something that's not invincible or at the same time dangerous. I don't know, all these things. And I think it was one of the kind of works which makes you very, you know, come very close to your own body and your own interior. And like when you walk into that space, it's almost like walking into a womb because you become, there's a sound element in there. It's not just the visual of, you know, it awakens your curiosity about finding out what happens inside the body, which is your own, it's very similar to your own body. So you're sort of following this journey within, inside the murky inside of the body, and it's fascinating, it's disgusting, and it's very, it awakens your curiosity, so it's quite an experience. It does offer you an experience, and also I know that a lot of men find it really frightening to actually stand inside and have the heartbeat and the breathing, you know, it's too frightening, it's because, whereas women feel a bit more comfortable because it's like they feel closer to the body, they don't have that kind of feeling of wanting to be distanced from it. And also, I mean, there's all sorts of things like, you know, the fact that the body has been projected on the floor and you can actually walk all over it. At the same time, it has that kind of frightening aspect because it's like the vagina dentata or the devouring womb, or, you know, it sort of awakens all sorts of fears and anxieties that are associated with a woman's body. So as usual, it has these kind of two aspects, the kind of positive and negative. So it sort of brings out a lot of emotions in you when you're watching it. So you cannot remain outside of it, if you like. It sort of draws you in. I suppose that's probably why it's such a popular piece and it's constantly being shown everywhere. For me, the point of departure behind this piece was my interest in surveillance. Surveillance, you know, how we're always observed. We're always, I mean, this is something that I picked up when I first came to the West, to England. I noticed that there were cameras everywhere, you know, surveillance cameras. And I felt this is something that I picked up on, whereas probably someone who was brought up within that way of living wouldn't have noticed. So this whole idea of Big Brother watching us and all that, I became very aware of it way before 1984. And so when I was a student and we're talking about 1979, 1980, I actually conceived of this idea of making a work that's about surveillance. I did that with a number of performances, where I was like pretending that the camera could see through either the layers of clothes with the people in the audience. I was playing all sorts of tricks to pretend that my camera had X-ray vision and could see through people's clothes. And I wanted then to make this video work where I would actually have the camera sort of travel inside the body. And so for me, it was like stretching this idea of being observed and being scrutinized by the eye of Big Brother to such an extreme that it actually goes inside the body and does not leave a single corner unturned. It sort of moves everywhere. So this was the initial idea behind it. Yeah, I mean, I've always liked, as I mentioned, this piece, Light Sentence, and another piece called Short Pace, where I was always thinking or trying to articulate this idea of institutional power and abuse of power by the institutions. Institutions being anything like, you know, I was thinking, you know, institutions like anything, like we grow up through school and whatever, church, prison, army, all those, you know, all the governmental institutions which are there to, you know, control you and, you know, keep you within certain limits. But even at that point, when I was working with these big installations, I always wanted to bring back those same ideas to the personal relationships, to, you know, between two people. Like I made a very early work, which is also based on furniture. It was untitled, and it was basically two chairs, a large chair made with wire mesh, you know, with the squares, a large chair and an identical but smaller one sort of facing each other. And it was like, it was a relationship with two things, entities, or two people which were exactly the same, but one was obviously smaller, therefore overpowered by the other one. So, I mean, what I'm saying is, even at that point when I was dealing with institutional violence, if you like, I wanted to also relate it to personal, domestic kind of violence. But yeah, and then going to the extreme of talking about the home as an institution where violence could be also present. But a work like Homebound was, even in the title, is very ambiguous, because homebound sounds like someone bound by the home, like imprisoned by the home, as could be the experience of women sort of with, you know, feeling compromised by domestic chores or whatever, family, all that. But also homebound means going back home, or it could even mean someone under house arrest. Or, you know, there's all sorts of things. And actually, the work itself, which is this room full of domestic furniture, you know, the most prominent in the front is a kitchen table with kitchen utensils, and everything is metal and everything is connected together with electricity coursing through all the cables and through the actual metal objects, the kitchen utensils, the chairs, the table, everything is connected together. And there's light bulbs underneath these kitchen utensils or inside, you know, various objects that sort of light up gradually and become, you know, they fade up and down within the objects. And at the same time, the electricity that's feeding those light bulbs is amplified. So you have the buzzing sound of the electricity. So it's really quite a disturbing sound that sort of really comes, gets into your skin, you know. And so the ensemble of all these elements make it into something that's very dangerous. You're looking at the electricity going through all these objects, 240 volts. So it looks dangerous, but it also, you hear it. The sound actually emphasizes that kind of feeling of danger. But of course, the whole thing is barricaded behind wire. So, but you don't know, it's sort of, you think, is the wire there to protect you from this very unhealthy, evil environment? Or is it there to keep the people imprisoned inside it? Or, I mean, the wires themselves that create the fence look like electric fence as well. So there's all these kind of layers of... So, I mean, it's sort of really playing on all these things. I want people to be open enough to realize that each work has several meanings, and it also works primarily on a physical level. It has to work for me. It's very much about the physical presence, the physical experience, whether it's the materials, whether it's the shadows in this piece or whatever. And this is very important, and it's through this, those kind of formal elements that I actually try to communicate certain ideas or connotations or associations, and those associations are never just single. I mean, there can be several ways of reading a work, and it's very much about what you bring to it as a spectator, because it's very much about what you pick up, what aspect. And I hate limiting those readings. And what I don't like is very often interviewers come armed with these questions about what is it about your work that relates to your background, and that's where I really... that's really limiting the work, because sometimes it doesn't even have any reference. It could be just playing with materials, and it could be much more kind of poetic and maybe mute even. It doesn't necessarily always have to be articulating a big issue. But unfortunately, because I come from an embattled background, you know, I come from Lebanon, my parents are Palestinian, very often people want to just read one thing. And when an interviewer comes, you know, with these questions like, oh, what is it that relates to your background? And what I just get a bit irritated. I just feel like, of course, these references are there because they're part of me. But at the same time, it doesn't mean that you can reduce the work to just its geographical elements of me being from a specific, you know, I don't like people to reduce it to just one meaning or one reading or one Yeah, but always they want to relate it to my own background. And that's a very journalistic way of thinking in many ways, you know, just explaining this by this means this. It's never this means this. It means this and this and this and this. You know, it means several things. It's not just one meaning. It's, as far as I'm concerned, through this kind of visual form, you cannot articulate things very, very clearly and very directly. It's not like when you're explaining something with words, even then it can be misinterpreted. So why is it that they think that an artwork has to have one single meaning? It's impossible. The visual language is quite slippery. It can be interpreted in so many different ways. You can't just, it's not as if you're giving an expose or, you know, a lecture about something. It's very much looser. I like to bring out that, you know, richness of the work and keep it open, you know.